Hi, and welcome to the Well Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. This week, we're going to be talking about spooky books to put us in the mood for Halloween, and we have a very special guest with us, Tracy Cox, Information Services Coordinator for the Beaufort County Library System and the creator of our beautiful logo. Thank you for being here with us, Tracy.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
I'm excited to have you here because I am a complete scaredy cat and I don't read spooky books very often. So I was really struggling to think of books for this topic. And I know this is something that you are a fan of these types of books. So I think your knowledge will be wonderful for us. So first of all, both of you, what kind of spooky books do you like?
I am 100% in the ghost story, haunted house realm of spooky books. And even as I was doing this, I kept thinking I should do like other spooky books. I should be more varied in this, but that's what I want to read. And when I'm hearing about Halloween books, I always want them to be haunted house books or ghost books. So if someone were doing this and I were a listener, I would want more of this type of book. So I decided to just be true to myself and go with this.
Always be true to yourself.
Yes.
All right, Tracy, what about you? What kind of spooky books do you like?
Well, I'm not going to offer too much variety because I'm the same as Anne. I really do lean towards the ghost stories. If I'm browsing a collection, I tend to just kind of move over the werewolves and vampires, which they all have their merits. But the ghosts definitely totally creep me out. And I'm always drawn to those books, even though they keep me up way too late at night.
And what do you think the appeal of reading a scary book would be for our listeners, or for me, who doesn't usually read spooky books? Why would I want to pick one up?
Why don't you want to pick one up?
Because I live by myself. And when I watch scary things on TV or read scary things, they have a tendency to stay in my head and really stick with me more than other types of things that I consume as entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. It freaks me out.
Yeah.
And it's not enjoyable to me, I guess. It used to be. I used to like watching like movies like Scream and stuff. I liked that scared feeling. Yeah. But I don't know anymore. It's not fun to me to be scared, I guess.
I can relate to that because I used to have roommates and now I don't. Mm-hmm. And I now can't watch things that I used to watch. And my brother's always telling me, you need to watch this movie. And I'll say, I can't do it right now. And so even reading these books, there are times of the day I don't like to read them where it becomes a little too scary and I know I won't sleep, but I still enjoy it's still a little bit delicious to have that like if it's raining outside or it's getting later in the afternoon and the sun is starting to change, the light is different in my apartment and I like that feeling of, oh, this just got creepy, but maybe because I can control it and make it what works for me, I find that really fun. But I think it just also could be a personality thing. I've always loved scary things. And I've always wanted to live in a spooky house. And I've always, the aesthetic of it has always been really appealing to me. So, but I know for other people, that's just not the case. So I think that there's a spooky book for everyone, though. I think that there are so many levels of scary that you can do something that's very light. And like when you're a kid, maybe that's Goosebumps. And then you can go to your Christopher Pikes when you're ready for the real terror. So I think that just being able to recognize what you can handle is a good way of getting a little bit of Halloween fun in your life.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I will not crack open a scary book if I'm home by myself. There is a comfort with my husband being there, but he tends to fall asleep always before me. So there is a comfort there that there is another human next to me.
Right. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I find if I'm reading a scary book, I corner myself up against the wall. Like I will not read a scary book with my back like to an open room or to an open window. And I think with horror stories, there is the pleasure comes with the relief of that. It's the safety of everything. Like, you know, there's a little bit of a thrill, like it gets the endorphins going, it gets the adrenaline, but you know that you're safe. You know that when you close that book, you'll still have the memory of the book with you, but you're relatively sure that you can go to bed and survive the night. It gives you that little bit of a thrill without having the consequences of being in an actual horror scenario.
Right. And Tracy and I were talking about this yesterday that there's a difference between a supernatural scary book where you can feel pretty confident that you're this is just made up and this is not real. And then there's books that are legitimately scary to you because they could happen in real life. And those are like, I can't watch those types of movies. Maybe with a book I could handle it, but seeing it in film form, I absolutely can't do that. So anything about like, I don't know, someone in your house, things like that. Yeah. I will not.
That's what when I was thinking about this, I think movies and books that have feature a psychotic killer, someone that's beyond hope, that, you know, they're just so far down the rabbit hole of, you know, that kind of personality that there is no hope. And those are the stories that I tend to avoid because there's nothing I can do to fix them, or that there is no hope at the end that they're going to be nice anymore. I mean, they're just, but there also is a division of the good versus the bad. Like, and I think that's something that people like about horror books is that, you know, they're the good guys and then there are clearly the bad guys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no in between stage where you're left to kind of judge someone's character, where maybe people that read thrillers and mysteries tend to like that mystery of who's good and who's bad. Where horror is like, there's the bad guy and there's the good guy, and you pick a side. I think so.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. All right, so you maybe convinced me, but what are your suggestions of what somebody should read during this time of year when we're getting a little bit of a chill in the air and ready for Halloween?
Well, my first book is called The Ghost Rider by John Harwood. And it's a few years old. It's about a man named Gerard Freeman, and he is growing up in 1960s Australia, and his mother was born in England. All through his childhood, he's listened to her tell stories about the family home in England, which is called Staplefield. And when she talks about it, she won't talk about the family at all. She'll only talk about the house and how it was just this amazing estate and how much she loved it. So Gerard is very curious about his family background, and when he's kind of digging around in his mom's papers, he finds a manuscript to a ghost story that his grandmother, who is named Viola Hatherley, she wrote the story in the 1890s. So his mother finds him with this stack of papers as he's reading it, and she completely flips out. And he doesn't understand why this has made her so upset, but as a result, don't have a very close relationship. So as he's growing up, because he doesn't have this relationship with his mom, he is pretty isolated and lonely, and he starts a pen pal friendship with a girl in England named Alice. And they grow really close as they write these letters to each other, and they write all through their teen years, and there starts to become a little bit of a romance between them. So as an adult, side note, he becomes a librarian. Yes. So that's already a stamp in his favor. He goes to England, and he decides he's going to do this trip to be able to find out more about his family and try to find this house, and also to try to meet Alice and see if there's anything there with her. It's very upfront in the book that he doesn't find either of them, but he does find more stories that were written by his grandmother. So they're included in the text of the book, and it's, I think, three stories that he finds or that are printed in full in the book. So that makes up about half of the text. So you're getting a good chunk of other creepy things that you get to read. And they're all these Victorian Gothic ghost stories. So I really liked that aspect of it because it felt like I was getting, I guess, four stories in one book. And I thought that was very fun. But as Gerard is reading these stories, he starts to realize that there are clues to what has actually happened to his family. The lines between fact and fiction are starting to blur, and he's starting to distrust his perceptions of how things have been. And that just makes for a very eerie and unsettling experience. And there are very, very strong Gothic elements and very strong ghost story elements with an old house and no electricity in the house. And I read this once. I think I've only read it the one time, but I read it for a book club, and I was finishing up on a Sunday afternoon, and the lights started to, I hadn't turned the lights on yet. I started when it was nice and bright, and then it started to get darker and darker in my apartment. And I got so scared by the end of this book. If you're into the Victorian tradition of the Victorian ghost story tradition, this is a really, really good choice. The author also has, I think, two other books in the same style. He has a book that's called The Asylum and one that's called The Seance. And so they're just really great Halloween reading to get you in the mood.
Well, that sounds good, Anne. What was the title of that one again?
It's called The Ghost Rider by John Harwood.
Thanks. Now, Tracy, what about you?
Okay, the first one I'm going to talk about is a classic. It's an oldie but a goodie. It's The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, written in 1959. So I listened to the audiobook last year during October, of course, because when else do you listen to scary books? And I really liked the audio version. I thought the narrator did a good job. And I'm sorry, I don't have which version I listened to. But so the overall plot is the main character, her name is Eleanor. Such a beautiful name. It's my daughter's name. I'm not sure if there's any coincidence there, if that was an inspiration or not. But the main character and a few other participants are invited to by a paranormal researcher to stay at a mansion called Hill House to participate in an experiment. The professor, Dr. Montague, feels that the time has come to get some proof of the paranormal, and Hill House provides the perfect setting. It's important to mention that Eleanor is deeply unhappy with her life. Her family seems to make her decisions for her. She doesn't get out much. So when she receives this letter asking her to come participate in this experiment, she is very drawn in. This is an adventure that she hasn't quite been exposed to. And she's, I don't want to say she's middle-aged, but she's definitely not a teenager or young. So the time has come for her to start making decisions on her own. So she, we'll say, borrows her family's car. Or aka steals her family's car and heads off on this adventure to Hill House. And when she arrives, I mean, the house, it describes it as just very menacing. I mean, it just kind of stands against the background, and that the audiobook did a really good job of kind of setting it up. Now, she soon learns that the house has a history of suicide and tragedy. When she arrives, the professor kind of takes her in and explains what's going on. And not long after the guests arrive, the house does not disappoint. Eleanor starts hearing things and seeing things, maybe something along the hallway. And she's very vulnerable to the house. It seems that the house may be kind of singling her out. So I don't want to say too much more, but the book is eerie as eerie comes. I mean, it's one of the original scary stories, I think. And for those that may have seen it, the movie was made, and the title is called just The Haunting. They left out the Hill House part, but it's called The Haunting, and it was in black and white, and I felt like it did a pretty good job of telling the story and giving that totally creepy effect of the haunted house.
Yeah, the movie is one of my favorites to show at Halloween parties, because there are a couple of scenes that make everyone scream.
Yes,
it's a great, great, great movie and a great Halloween book.
Oh, great! Yeah, and I think one thing I love about it is the monster is never there. Is there a monster? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the imagination at work. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. for those of you with an active imagination, you may really enjoy this book.
So my next book is also a Shirley Jackson book. Tracy and I are on the same wavelength. I am a huge Shirley Jackson fan. So this book is one of my favorites to read any time of year, but especially at Halloween time. It's called We Have Always Lived in the Castle. I don't think it's as famous as The Haunting of Hill House. And it's not a haunted house book in the same sense that one is. It centers around the Blackwood family, and they live in a big house that's outside a small town, and they're very isolated, and they're openly disliked by the townspeople. And the reader learns pretty early on that several years ago, a bowl of sugar on the dinner table was laced with arsenic, and four members of the family were murdered. The point of the story starting, then, the oldest daughter, Constance, had been accused and acquitted of the crime, and she now lives with her younger sister, who's named Mary Cat, and their uncle Julian, who is in a wheelchair and trying to write the family history, but he's losing his memory, so he's kind of a unreliable narrator in the book. Mary Cat is the main character, and she's really one of the most interesting characters that I've ever encountered. She's very, very superstitious, and she's very protective of Constance, her older sister, and she's a teenager, but she has this kind of childlike way of relating to the world. She makes comments about things that should be a big deal, but she doesn't play them off that way. So you're reading along and you think, wait, what just happened? And she just doesn't have any commentary on it. And it's really, really interesting that she does that. So despite being rejected by the town, the family situation is seeming to work for them until a man that claims to be their cousin Charles shows up and he starts asking questions. Constance and Julian initially welcome him, but Mary Cat, for the whole book, thinks that there's something dangerous about him, and she feels like she needs to stop him from infiltrating the family. So like I said, it's less scary in the ghost sense or the haunted house sense, but there's this underlying sense of dread and unease that's running through the whole thing. The structure of it is kind of strange, but I love reading it because it feels like it's an inverted ghost story or an inverted fairy tale, where they usually start with an established villain and you just see what kind of terrible actions the villain uses against people. But in this story, it focuses on what makes someone distrusted and what will ostracize someone from society. And that's just really eerie to me to see how that happens. So if you've read other Shirley Jackson books like The Lottery or short stories, I should say, like The Lottery, you get that same, it has that same sort mm-hmm. of feeling to it of what's going on here. And this is just very unsettling. So as a side note, I suggested this as a book club pick for my roommates when we had a book club at one point. And everyone liked it, but they all agreed it was the most Anne book they had ever read. and so then after that, they started to stand outside my room and whisper, "We have always lived in the castle." And then I'd start shrieking a lot. And it was a great time for everyone.
Good times for all.
Yes. So it's one of my absolute favorite books. If we ever do a favorite book episode, yes. I'm just giving all of mine away right now because I love this book. It's pretty short, so it's a good Halloween pick if you just want something for the weekend. And it's very, very fun.
Well, I feel like now Shirley Jackson could be added to my list because those both seem like ones I can handle, but mm-hmm. they sound a little bit creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sound good. I think you could deal with those.
Unsettling, I'm okay with.
Right.
Tracy, what's your next one?
Okay, I'm going to talk about Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. So the story goes, the main character, Jude Coyne, is an aging former rock star. So the book's very, very metal. He now is a collector of morbid objects such as a witch's confession and other creepy things. So naturally, when he receives word of an unusual, totally creepy object for sale online, he buys it. When the item arrives, it, as no surprise, comes in a heart-shaped box. So inside the box is a man's suit that claims that the ghost of the deceased man who previously wore it is still attached to the suit. But Jude is not prepared for what has come to haunt him. Jude soon starts seeing and hearing things. His girlfriend that lives with him wants to help solve the mystery of who wore this suit last and what's causing all this weirdness in their house. They want to know how they can escape the nightmare situation they're now in. I don't want to disclose too much more because the book is actually kind of complicated. The storyline is very hard to describe. It's just know that a heart-shaped box arrives and it's not quite what you think. The book definitely had some creepy moments where I was suddenly aware of how alone I was in the room.
Oh, no.
Like when the hair on the back of your neck stands up. It evolves from, it starts off very spooky and then it kind of evolves into a mystery thriller, like you're trying to solve this mystery. So what I liked the most was the buildup of trying to figure out what's up with the suit. I really like the unknown parts of it. For those who don't know, Joe Hill is the son of mega authors Stephen King. And unsurprisingly, they write very similar. The book is very easy to read. You kind of get involved with the characters. And, you know, I've read some Salem's Lot, and I felt like it read very similar, so it did keep my interest. But overall, I don't think it was what I was expecting when I picked it up. Of course, I read the side panel, and I hear ghosts, and I said, okay, this is a book for me. And it was an excellent book. It's just not typically what I read, but I do recommend it if someone's looking for a nail-biting mm-hmm. mystery thriller yeah. slash paranormal book.
I always think of that one as a little more traditional horror, whereas... It's not as much of a haunted house, but does it have gory elements or is it?
I don't remember gory. Okay. Yeah, and I'm not a fan of gory. Definitely not. So I don't remember too much being gory. That's not to say it's not in there. It has been a little while since I've read it, but it did have the ghosty stuff. So yeah. You may want to pick it up.
I will.
Oh, tell me the title again.
I'm sorry. This is The Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. It's a 2007.
Thank you.
My third book is The Woman in Black by Susan Hill. It was recently made into a movie starring Daniel Radcliffe, and I think that most people know about it through that, which if you need a movie for Halloween, that is a great, great movie. It's so spooky. But most people that I've talked to about the movie don't seem to have read the book, and I think it's really worth reading. The ending is very different, and there are many elements that have changed from the two, so I think that it's worth visiting if you liked the movie. It's set in the early 20th century, I want to say maybe Edwardian or 1920s, and it's about a young solicitor who's named Arthur Kipp. He works for a law firm in London, and he's sent to settle the estate of a woman named Alice Drablow, who was a reclusive widow, and she lived in a place called Eel Marsh House. Yee! And it's on the moor in northern England. The house is on a beach, and it's separated from the town by a causeway that floods when the tides come in. So the house can't be reached, and you can't leave the house when this tide has come in. So Arthur attends Mrs. Drablow's funeral, and he sees a mysterious figure there of a woman who's dressed in Victorian mourning dress, and she's being watched by a group of children. And he thinks this is kind of strange, but he doesn't really think too much of it. And then he later goes to the house and begins to sort through these papers that to get her estate in order. And he begins to learn a lot of mysterious information about Mrs. Drablow. And he, at the same time, starts to hear things in the house. And he knows that there's no one that could be there because the tide has come in and he's the only person that's there. But then he starts to see the woman in black in the house. So he's very unsettled by this, and he goes back to town and tries to find out what's going on, but the townspeople won't talk about anything, and he realizes he's going to have to figure this out all on his own, and he goes to face the woman in black on his own in the house, and it's terrifying. So I can't really give away anything else. It's a really short book, and so there's a lot of information packed into it. But you get all of your classic ghost story pieces. There's an old house, there's fog, there's creepy children, and it's not really set up with, you don't have shock tactics that are used to give you your scares. It's all the fear of the unseen. So it's just a fabulous book. I would highly recommend that. And that's The Woman in Black by Susan Hill.
Thank you. Tracy, what's your last one?
Okay, my last one is not typically categorized as a horror novel, but I kind of read it as such. It's called In the Heart of the Sea, The Tragedy of the Whale Ship Essex by Nathaniel Philbrick. He wrote that in 2001. So this is a story of a disaster at sea. The cause for this, and this is a true story, by the way, the cause for this disaster is a gigantic sperm whale that rams a whaling ship in the middle of the ocean and strands its crew. This takes place in the early 1800s. If this sounds a little familiar, it's the same story that directly inspired Herman Melville to write Moby Dick.
Oh.
It's such a good book. I absolutely love it. I'm a reader of nonfiction, historic nonfiction, and this book did not disappoint. So it takes place in 1819 at the height of the Nantucket booming whale industry. So the beginning of the book really describes Nantucket, gives you a lot of visuals, and the author does go into a lot of detail about the whaling industry. I got a little lost in the details and the history, but it's something that I felt it was very interesting because I just was completely unfamiliar with it. I had no idea the volume of oil that was gathered during this time period. So that's kind of how the book starts out. And then it's no secret that all of a sudden this whale rams this ship in the middle of the ocean.
Oh,
and the crew members are left on three small whaling boats, and they're all divided up. And you get to know the crew members and their personalities and the different classes and ranks on the ship. And you just have to read to find out what happens. But the book doesn't typically fall into the category of horror, but oh my goodness, the book had some horrific things. And I'm just going to highlight a few things just to maybe entice you to read it. But it definitely involves some drawing of lots and cannibalism among crew members. Definitely some extreme despair, if that's your kind of thing. there is a little glimmer of hope that does show through. One thing I loved about it is the highlight of the perseverance of human beings to survive. And I don't know what it is lately about books like that just about survival. Maybe I feel like I'm in training or something. I don't know, but it's helpful to read if I'm ever stranded in the middle of the ocean. But Anne made my day when she told me that this is coming out in movie format in December. I had no idea. I've apparently have been living under a rock for the past year.
They're called kids.
Yes. Having kids will do that to you. But the movie is coming out, I think, December 11th. And I am so incredibly stoked. I just can't wait to see this movie. I hope they do it justice. Because the story in itself of a nonfiction book, I mean, it's just amazing. It's just an excellent book.
It sounds like it could be very cinematic with the way you just described it. Like there's a lot that it seems like they could really make into a good movie.
Yes.
So hopefully.
Yes. And I would file this under horror. I mean, it definitely
was horrifying.
Very horrifying. It was unsettling. I read this over a year ago and I still can't shake it. I mean, mm-hmm. I just the fear of the ocean and being stranded and all the decisions that they have to make is just, it's just crazy.
That's a great pick. Yeah.
I was really excited when Tracy told me she was going to do this because it deals with real fear that people have. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun to have these like supernatural books, but then the things that actually scare us are things of being lost and being alone, and those are really terrifying. So I like the variety that she brought.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much, Tracy.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're so grateful that you could come and do this. I hope you'll come again.
Oh yes, please.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back. So, Anne, what were you reading this week?
I am giving our listeners a bonus spooky book because it's October. So what else am I going to read? The one I'm reading right now is called The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters, and it takes place in rural England. England seems to be a theme for spooky books. It takes place just after World War II, and it's about a doctor named Dr. Faraday who works in the country, and he is called to attend a patient at a family estate that's named Hundreds Hall, and it's the formerly grand estate of the Ayers family. And when he was a child, his mother actually worked there, and so he attended parties on the grounds of the estate, but there was a big separation between the wealthy family that lived there and his own. They were very working class. And when he goes back to an adult, then he's a doctor, and so he's able to sort of move into their circle. And he's really surprised to see that the house has completely fallen into decay and that Mrs. Ayers is living there with her adult children, who are named Caroline and Roderick, and they're basically just trying to hold this huge house together by themselves, and they really can't do it. So he begins a friendship with this family to try to help them a little bit, and he is watching how their entire way of life has become obsolete, but they really don't have any other thing that they can do. They don't have any skills, really. As their relationship continues, then some strange things start to happen in this house. There are some weird markings on the walls, and things start to fall from the ceiling, but just out of his line of vision. So it's just very, very unsettling. And he can tell that this family that's already really struggling with their finances and they're already really strained, they're starting to crack under the pressure of the things that are happening in this house. So everything really slowly unfolds. It's a very slow burn, but Sarah Waters is really good at creating tension and building it to the end. And it's not really a simple ghost story. It's has a lot to do with class tension and the way society changed after World War II, when the lower classes were sort of rising up and the gentry was losing their land and their money and their status, and they really had nothing to offer society. They didn't know anything else to do with themselves. So I would say it's a more literary book than your typical ghost story. It was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 2009, and Sarah Waters is just a phenomenal writer. In some of the reviews I read, they talked about how periods of the book can be really slow, but I think that she is really skillful at making it build in a way that creates just an enormous amount of tension. If you're a fan of Downton Abbey, then it kind of has the similar themes about the loss of the land and how you can't divide it, and you have this sense of responsibility to past generations. But this is like the creepy version of it, when the family has lost everything and they're living by candlelight in a huge house. And I think it's really, really great. I haven't finished it yet, but I have really enjoyed it so far.
I read another Sarah Waters book. It was The Night Watch, mm-hmm. and I really liked that. I liked her writing style.
Yeah,
this one sounds good.
Yeah, she's known for writing. I think she only does historical fiction, mm-hmm. and sometimes that gets a little look down on, I mm-hmm. think, but her writing style really raises it up and gives it a good name. So yeah. It's great.
All right. So this week I read Why Not Me by Mindy Kaling, which is a book that we had discussed in our fall book preview episode as something we were really looking forward to. And it was everything I hoped for and more.
Yes.
I just loved this book. I really liked her first book, which came out maybe 4 years ago, but that focused more on her life growing up and what kind of got her to the career that she was in, and with a few essays about her current life. But I felt like more it was background.
Right.
And this one really focused more on her life in the past few years since she had her own TV show and how that's changed her life and being a woman in charge kind of mm-hmm. viewpoint. And so it's delved into some real issues about self-confidence and body image and what people expect from women, but all while being really funny. And mm-hmm. she's really, really witty and smart. I wish I could be that quick on just a quick joke or
yeah.
quick observation.
Yeah.
She's just really, really funny. I pretty much want her to be my best friend now.
We're going to fight for that.
I know we're going to fight for that. I think we're fighting with a lot of other people in the world, because she just comes across as very relatable
right.
and likable, but again, very smart and very capable. Like mm-hmm. She talks about her work day, and it's a long day that she describes as a work day. So, you know, she's working really hard. She doesn't take this lightly, and she realizes the benefits of being famous and having this in her life, but she also sees the downsides of it. And I just really, I highly recommend it to anybody. It's funny and it's a quick read, but there's also a little bit of depth there about mm-hmm. her observations that I really liked. And you read this too.
Yes,
Anne.
I did. I really enjoyed it as well. And I liked that she talks about what it takes to be successful mm-hmm. and she's just really honest about mm-hmm. it, of how hard she has to work and
right.
how in certain ways she has to work harder than other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's great that she can talk about these things, but still make it fun and
right.
light and not
right.
make it feel like it's this like like, here's how to be successful, this thing you have to follow. She just is
and
really
it's not
honest.
Polemic. It's not like a rant against the establishment and how women have to work harder or anything like that, or people of color have to work harder. Like, she's just like, this is my life. Mm-hmm. This is the situation I've been put in, and I worked really hard, but I know that I've had some breaks too, you know, sort of a situation. So she seems grateful for what she's achieved, but also feels justified in having achieved it. Like, she deserves it because she worked really hard. And so I always like that perspective.
Yeah. And you'll get lots of pictures of her eating McDonald's too. Yes. She apparently is a huge fan.
Yes. Yes. So. Yes, she is. And I'm also fascinated by her relationship with BJ Novak, who is with her on The Office and was a boyfriend for one time at one time, but now they're not dating, but they're sort of each other's soulmates. Or what is she refers to them as soupmates or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's just, there's a lot of inside information without giving too much away.
And she knows that that's what the reader wants. She's very aware of what women are interested in other women's lives. And so she's just like, I'm going to lay this out here. This is how it goes. And so, yeah, it's a great book.
All right, so now, Tracy, we go back over and list off all the books that we talked about. So do you want to list off the books that you recommended today?
Sure. Today, I talked about The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill, and In the Heart of the Sea, The Tragedy of the Whale Ship Essex by Nathaniel Philbrick.
And I talked about The Ghostwriter by John Harwood, We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson, The Woman in Black by Susan Hill, and what I'm reading this week is The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters.
And what I was reading this week was Why Not Me by Mindy Kaling. Thank you again to Tracy for coming on to our Halloween spooky book episode. We appreciate you coming. I think you both convinced me to maybe pick up a spooky book. Yay. I think that if I pick up a spooky book, then Anne has to pick up a romance novel.
I'll do it.
And so I will pick one for her. Maybe she can pick one for me.
That'd be a fun episode.
Would that be a fun project?
We could totally do
project?
That. Yeah.
If you want to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. We'd also love to hear if you've read one of our suggestions from a previous episode or this episode and what you thought of it. If you listen on iTunes, please rate and review us. That helps people find the podcast. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farver. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at beaufortcountylibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to beaufortcountylibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. You'll need a BCL library card in order to use this service. And thank you all for listening, and happy reading, and happy Halloween!